Welcome to Manager Tools. This is Kate.
And this is Sarah.
Today's cast. Interviewing is not a two-way street.
The questions this cast answers are, is interviewing a two-way street? What do I do if a candidate starts asking questions? And how are candidates supposed to learn about the company?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
Hey, Manager Tools listeners, we've got exciting news just for you. For years, you've been tuning in to boost your management skills, and we've been listening too. Behind the scenes, we've been cooking up something special, a new offering designed specifically with you in mind. While we can't reveal all the details just yet, imagine having access to tailored resources that grow with you, from entry level to executive. It's Manager Tools Evolved, crafted to meet your unique needs at every step of your professional journey. By becoming a Manager Tools licensee now, you'll have access to everything you need. Trust us, you won't want to miss this. We're thrilled to take this next step with you. After all, your career success has always been our mission. Stay tuned. The future of Manager Tools is about to get even brighter, and it's all for you. So, Kate, we're here to talk today about interviewing, an incredibly important topic and one that we don't cover often on our podcasts generally. So much of our interviewing guidance has already been recorded. It's already in our library of podcasts. So if you're interested in information on interviewing, we have tons of it in our podcasts, and it's already previously released, previously recorded, and in our archive. So we're here to talk today about some what we think of as common wisdom as it applies to interviewing. When it comes to the candidates and the interviewers and their ability to ask and therefore receive answers to their questions. So if you're in the middle of an interview, note, you do not know enough to say yes yet. That is, when you are the interviewer, you are asking your questions. You don't know enough to say yes yet. So if your candidate at this point, at this juncture, mid-interview, asks you then, can you tell me more about the role? How many people am I going to be supervising? What kind of management training does your company provide? Can you tell me a little bit more about the organization and what I might be working on? What do you do? I mean, if you are the interviewer and they start in asking questions and you don't have enough information yet, what do you do?
It's interesting. Because thanks to the common wisdom and most people's fear of losing a good candidate who surely will want to know the answers to these questions, many managers will go ahead and answer the questions. That's the wrong answer. And that doesn't mean that candidate questions aren't important. It's really a matter of timing.
We have a very short outline. First, we're going to talk about how interviewing is not a two-way street. And then we're going to talk about, or we're going to give you some guidance on how to tell your candidate that politely. So, interviewing.
It may be, it's not a two-way street.
It's not a two-way street.
And it's maybe not something that everybody wants to hear either.
Well, let's be clear about what a two-way street means, right? A two-way street suggests that it means while the candidate is being interviewed and before an offer has been given or they've been declined as a candidate that we're going to offer a position to, that our candidate is then free and even encouraged to ask during their interview as many questions as they want about the company in order to help them make their decision about whether or not they want to come work for us. Inherently, a two-way street suggests they can ask whatever they want simultaneously while we're asking our questions so they can assess us while we're assessing them. That's what two-way street suggests.
Right. The analogy's imagery is a common city street with only two lanes. One goes one way, one goes the opposite way. The lanes would represent, in this case, questions or questioning power, the option to question. One lane is for the manager's questions of the candidate, and the lane going the opposite direction is for the candidate's questions of the manager. And in our little analogy, both the manager, interviewer, and the candidate can ask questions of the other at any time in the interview. That would be what it would be like if the interview was, in fact, a two-way street. Our core lesson, though, is that manager slash interviewer questions and candidate questions would be equally valid in the analogy. Like if it was a two-way street, equally valid for the candidate to ask a question, the interviewer to ask a question. Y'all, this is a disastrous idea.
Uh-huh. It absolutely is.
Interviews are not designed to be a two-way street, despite the common, I would suggest also slightly more recently, we've seen more of this wisdom.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We all want to be employers that people want to work for, right? We all want to sell our candidate, if you will. We all want to encourage them to want to come work here. But the thing is, interviews were not designed to be a two-way street. They weren't designed that way. No effective interviewer would give up the valuable, because it's so scarce time that they have, to gather behavioral evidence about whether or not the candidate is one that they want to make an offer to or not, in order to provide that time to the candidate to help them assess their interest in our organization.
Yeah. Well, and if you think about it from the idea of the purpose of an interview, the purpose of an interview from the candidate's perspective is to get an offer. And frankly, I would suggest the candidate trying to assess whether or not they want to come to work, for example, here or anywhere, should have already occurred. If you are interviewing at this organization, why would you not be interested in working here? The idea that I'm interviewing here, but I'm also interviewing the company because I'm not sure I want to work at this organization. Frankly, so much of the details about a company are online. So many people have an online presence. You could figure out who works there, what they look like. You could cobble together to some extent parts of org charts based on people's social media. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that you could go and find out about an organization. So to suggest that the candidate still needs to decide if this is a place where they might want to work, it indicates that candidates maybe aren't as prepared as they could be. Additionally, all interviewing suffers from a lack of time.
Yeah.
The best possible situation, right, would be if you could bring people in and they work in the office on a trial period or in the team doing what they're supposed to be doing. And of course, this is why you should value your interns. If you get interns at your organization, you should value them. You should treat them like they someday may be true candidates, because it's the best possible test, if you will, of whether or not a person will work at an organization well. And so many people do the same thing they do to interns that they do to candidates, which is they don't prepare for them, even though they're constantly saying, hey, we need more people in here. The minute somebody gets in, they're unprepared, and then interns are ignored, not utilized well. There's no way to then assess their future capability as an actual candidate. So word to the wise, consider that you shouldn't neglect your interns. Also consider that this really means that all of the interviewing you're doing, really, it suffers from the fact that you only get so much time to gather the information you need to say, yes, this person will be good, or no, they won't. Imagine you get, let's say, 2 hours of interview with this person. That's it. That's all you get. And for some people, that's true, right? And a lot of people, they say that they need candidates and then they truncate the interview process. They don't spend a lot of time on it. And unfortunately, what you're saying is, I can assess this person's ability to do this job in under 2 hours. Does that seem reasonable? I mean, how could that be reasonable?
That doesn't seem reasonable.
It's also such a small, like, you're going to spend 2 hours. And then if you only spend 2 hours on this person, you're going to sign up to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on them and work with them 8 or 10 hours a day for the next 5 years?
Yeah.
In some cases, the people you interview will outlast you in this organization. So you're putting in place a person whose daily behaviors will affect the organization for years to come. And you're going to do that in 2 hours?
Right. In 2 hours. Exactly.
If you're listening and you feel fear, I would encourage you to continue to feel that way. Because if your process does not allow for you to spend enough time interviewing candidates and assessing their viability, quite frankly, you should be scared. Mm-hmm. You don't have a lot of time to make this decision. You should be spending more time on it. And if you're not, and you're wondering why you don't get good candidates and you can't retain people, it might be on that leading edge of your interviewing. Why? And so if all you get is 2 hours and they have these questions, how much of this 2 hour time chunk are you really willing to spend on their question about how many people am I going to manage? And do they, can they tell the difference between 2 and 4 in your organization? Probably not. It baffles me. The math.
You're absolutely 6 minutes is 10% of an hour. Why would you give your time up? It's unimportant.
Honestly, they don't know what they're asking also. Now, this is probably more true of people who are younger in their careers. And still, unfortunately, it's harder with people who are younger in their careers because they haven't been through enough interviews to do it well. Mm-hmm. The data you're getting from them as you ask them questions is lower quality. They don't have good answers. They're not well-structured. They're not practiced. All of this is a function of a limited amount of time to assess your having to spend weeks, days, months, years with this person. You should be scared and you should be spending more time on this process. And okay,
yeah,
I'll stand down.
Okay. And folks, the reason Kate's so fired up about this is we're teaching interviewing constantly. And the number one piece of pushback we get from managers, hiring managers, interviewers generally, is the amount of time spent evaluating candidates. Mm-hmm. It's the number one piece of pushback we get. But to Kate's point, you have to spend hundreds of hours, potentially the rest of your career, with this individual. Why wouldn't you spend the time ensuring that they're the kind of person you want to have as part of your organization, part of your team, someone that you're going to work with hand in hand every single day at work? Why wouldn't you assess that information?
Recently, I got a bunch of pushback from a group about eating lunch with the candidate.
Yep.
They don't want to spend the 90 minutes in the middle of the day eating lunch with the person. Even though when we talk about an in-person day, they come in, they do some interviews in the morning, we do a 90-minute lunch.
Everyone needs to eat.
Yeah. So I got a bunch of pushback. And I thought to myself after I had left, and I didn't say it in the session, but I thought to myself after I have left, if you hire this person, you're going to have to eat lunch with them.
You are.
Why wouldn't you want to do that now? It's baffling to us. And okay, on the flip side, many managers are flummoxed.
That's exactly it.
By our idea.
Like they're like, okay, but what about the candidates? How are they going to ask their questions? Don't I want to make sure they get their questions answered? Don't we have a job to sell while we're evaluating? Won't they get their feelings hurt? Won't they think that we're being arrogant? Won't they make up all of these assumptions and assessments of our lack of openness to questions? And folks, the answers to those questions are simple. Don't worry. The candidates are going to ask their questions when it's time for them to ask their questions. Yes, you do want to give some of the time in your interview in order for them to get some of their small questions answered.
Yes.
Yes. You also have a job to both evaluate and persuade the individual to want to work for your organization. But
once you've decided.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. These things don't have to happen simultaneously as it relates to questions. No, they won't get their feelings hurt as long as we explain our rationale quickly and politely. And it's a good rationale. It's a perfectly valid reason. But this is the primary reason, folks, that this two-way street analogy, it doesn't work.
Right. It creates a false equivalence between the two types of questions based on the timing of questions. And it's dangerous for candidates because virtually all managers approach interviews with the idea that if they don't have enough information to say yes, their default answer is no.
Right.
And if the candidate asks a bunch of questions that will help him only if he gets an offer later, they're nearly killing any chance that they will get that offer because the value of the questions the candidates often ask and the answers the manager gives are exactly zero if the candidate doesn't get an offer. If the candidate's asking post-offer informational questions, the answers will not serve them at this point because they're actually making it harder for them to get an offer.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And to your point a moment earlier, Kate, about the more junior they are, they don't necessarily understand the fact that asking all of these questions is decreasing the likelihood that they will be made an offer to. But that's essentially what's happening. The more time spent answering their questions, which again, to your point, don't matter unless they work here. The more time spent answering their questions, the less time spent doing what we're supposed to be doing right here, right now, evaluating whether or not we want to make them an offer. And they're essentially getting in their own way. Yo, get out of your way. Since most managers are neither effective nor efficient at interviewing, cutting a manager or interviewer's 60 minutes of questions, let's say, if you have an hour, 60 minutes of questions for the candidate down to 40 minutes for evaluation is a terrible idea for the interviewer and the candidate because of this two-way street, what we would suggest is stupid common wisdom.
I think, too, the candidates, it's not their fault.
No, it's not.
A lot of people haven't been to a lot of interviews. They don't have a lot of experience. And they certainly, most people, don't have a lot of experience as an interviewer.
Yeah.
They don't. They don't know. I almost wonder if this shouldn't be both a Manager Tools and a Career Tools podcast, because really, I mean, I think it's just as valuable for the candidate to know that it's a two-step process rather than a two-way street. And I talk to managers all the time, and they're in our hiring training, and they have never interviewed a candidate. It's not that the candidate is the only person lacking the experience to make this logic obvious. Both people sometimes are, and that's why we're talking about it here. I mean, think about it. If we have 60 minutes and we cut it down to 40, as you suggested, because the candidate has these questions, if you're not interested in hiring this person and they ask a bunch of questions about the firm in that 20-minute chunk, what good does that do them? It does no good.
It actually harms them. And they don't know, to your point, they have no idea, but asking questions that the answer to doesn't even matter unless I offer you the job is really problematic.
I once heard Mark say, I, me, mine. It's like a Dr. Seuss. Like, we talked about questions and what are good questions and what are bad questions. And essentially, selfish questions are ones we would deem poor questions. And where do I sit? How much do I get? That kind of thing. It always rings in my head like this little Dr. Seuss kind of rhyme. So rather than the two-way street analogy, a better analogy is that interviewing is two one-way streets in serial and not in parallel. So both sides still get to ask questions, but in an order that's respectful of how the decision authority is between the candidate and the manager happen. I always think of it as a one-lane bridge.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. You have to wait on one side for the other person to finish before you can cross. That's exactly it.
You're both allowed to use it. And imagine that on one side, there's five cars. And on the other side, there's one car. And so the five cars get to go first, right? The first decision in all interviews is whether the company wants to make an offer.
Yeah.
That means that the interview process should be built to support the company's decision first. And that's because, let's be honest, y'all, the company has something the candidate wants.
Yeah.
The candidate right now really should be striving to get the thing that the company has. So if we respect that, 95%+ of interview time should be reserved for the manager or interviewer's questions.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. And the second decision, which to your point, there are two decisions to evaluations, let's call it, to be made serially. The second decision, the candidate's decision, only occurs if the candidate gets the offer. So once an offer is made, it is the offered candidate's turn to have whatever time they need to ask all of the questions of the company that they could possibly desire the answer to in an effort to help them make the decision. We're not trying to suggest they shouldn't get the answers to their perfectly valid questions. Of course they should. They should get them at a time when it's useful for them, when it's not coming at the expense of them potentially getting an offer. Of course we should answer all of their questions when it's time to do so. So two one-way streets separated in time, that's the better analogy than the two-way street analogy.
I was talking to one of our M Conference speakers today and learned so much about how she facilitates growth in her organization. We talked about relationships, communication, and how to really get things done. Every time I talk to one of our speakers, I learn more about how other executives meet and overcome the challenges they face. If you want to learn from them too, good news, you can. Come to the M Conference and meet executives who are pushing things forward. Driven, smart people just like you who have playbooks they want to share. Maybe the next time you have a challenge, you already have the answer. The M Conference is October 9th and 10th in the Dallas-Fort Worth metro area. Sign up at manager-tools.com/training. So what do?
When the candidate asks a question, before you've had a chance to get through all of your questions or enough questions that you've made a decision, our first recommendation is to not interrupt.
Let them talk. Let them ask the question. Very few managers are so efficient in interviewing that the 15 seconds you save by cutting someone off will give you enough extra time to make an effective hire, not hire decision.
Yeah.
And cutting them off will sour them to the process. It's something that a lot of people find to be rude or disrespectful. Remember that they really do think that the two-way street analogy applies. People have told them, you're allowed to ask questions and you should, and not asking questions is bad. And y'all, people have told them that they should negotiate. Mm-hmm. So of all the things that they've heard that they should do, this is probably the most benign.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely the most benign. And folks, in that case, I mean, assume positive intent. We talk about assume positive intent all the time. Just assume that they don't know any better and they were told, because they probably were, that this is a two-way street, and it might even reflect poorly on them if they don't ask questions because they might not seem eager enough. Assume that's the case. It is far better to take a teaching approach than a power or scolding approach. If the question allows a very short answer, okay, going back to our situation, right? They ask a question, we don't interrupt them, we allow them to finish the question. If the question allows a very short answer, go ahead and answer it. And then let them know that your approach doesn't really allow for questions until the end. Now, if the question itself requires a more expansive answer, time-wise, don't answer it and share your approach to holding off on their questions. And in our show notes today, we have a script to help you craft what that might sound like.
Mm-hmm. First situation, we'd say, that's a fair question, and I'll answer it briefly, and then give them the short answer. Or you say, I'd love to answer that, but we just don't have time right now. And for both of those, you can also add, so I'm going to ask you to hold your questions until the end, if we have time. While I know there's thinking that interviewing is a two-way street, that's actually a little misleading. It's totally true that we want you to know everything you need to know about us if we make an offer. But if we make this interview a two-way street right now, I'm not going to get enough information to make a decision. Plus, the answers I give to your questions will only have value if we do make you an offer. Rest assured, if we do offer you, you can ask me or anyone else 1,000 questions and we'll answer every one of them.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Just be upfront about it. Don't be cagey about it. Don't shut them down. All right? Let them ask their question. And folks, assume that they've heard bad guidance about what it means to be a good candidate, because they have. Mm-hmm. Let's be clear. Oh, yeah. They absolutely have. They've heard way more bad guidance than good guidance. So just kind of help them understand this concept. And which now, Kate,
absolutely.
Now going back to your comment previously where you said this should almost be a CT podcast as well. Yeah, it absolutely should, because of that, because they don't know.
They don't know. And they are exposed to a lot of people are exposed to a lot of social media. And I'm not going to make suggestions about, you know, that overall. I will say this. I routinely on social media am sent from other people who know what we do and usually pretty close friends. They send me stuff about professional life. And I have seen people sending, once someone I'm actually pretty close to sent me an Instagram post about the best interview question ever. And the question was, if something like if you had a rowboat with a leak and there was a river and there was an old lady and a fox and a chicken.
Wow. Okay.
I couldn't tell if the person sending it to me thought that it was quality. And yeah. I was trying really hard to like suss out, does this person realize that this is a farce?
It's terrible.
Or do they understand that I find this to be satire and I think it's funny? I'm still not sure. In fact, I never ended up getting like a picture of it.
Yeah.
I also think, for example, I know people send me TikTok things.
Yeah, sure they do.
Full disclosure, I don't have TikTok, so that's unfortunate for me. Mm-hmm. I can't view the whole thing. The truth is I don't need to, because the first 6 seconds of those clips about here's how to do this in an interview are terrible advice. I know that people are being inundated by advice that, frankly, they're not even asking for, I think, in a lot of cases. You know, you don't really get to always choose. So I'm not trying to be disparaging about people are getting input, because I don't necessarily think all those people are asking for that input. You see some stuff, though. There's accounts on Pinterest,
right,
that tell you about interviewing. And you, lacking exposure, may believe that some of that is positive. It could make a lot of logical sense to you. You could see
absolutely
it.
Absolutely, it could.
Oh, I could see how that would work. Mm-hmm. It's really, truly just based on lack of understanding of the process, exposure mm-hmm. to the process as well. I think that most people sometimes internalize things from the internet that are not really valid for their moving forward.
And I would say, Kate, from like an interviewing perspective, it's not even just the internet, right? It's the people around us. Like, we're hearing messaging from other people who may have got their guidance from the internet or not. But additionally, a lot of interviewing, a lot of what candidates do and what they come to expect, et cetera, kind of is based on market fluctuation for any given role, right? When it's a hot market in the line of business which you're hiring candidates for, candidates start to understand, realize, are aware of the fact that because there are so few people and so many jobs, they can get away with more. And that's the thing, right? The common wisdom starts to change depending on the market. Now, going back to the purpose of interviewing, to begin with, for the organization to assess talent, that is something that candidates start to think changes over time a little bit, right? Now it's more about us assessing them because I'm the one holding the cards, which is not true. The purpose of interview didn't change just because it's a really hot market doing the thing that you do, but candidates start to behave that way or feel that way about how much power they have in said situation.
As well, I genuinely believe that it's hard for people to get good guidance from the people around them, because a lot of the people around you, no matter how long they've had a career, have not had a lot of exposure to interviewing.
Yeah.
I was in LA. I was in a restaurant and there was somebody giving guidance to somebody else about their resume. The one person who was receiving guidance was very young and the other person was older. And so I could see how that the person receiving guidance would make an assumption that this person knows the right answer.
Sure.
Unfortunately, having overheard 60% of that conversation, I would suggest that that person was not giving good guidance. And again, if you're interviewing, I've not seen a lot of cases where an interviewing candidate goes to somebody they know and says, how do I interview? What do I do? What's the guidance? And now, my situation's a little different. The people I know personally would ask somebody I know.
Yeah.
In general, though, I can imagine going to a mentor or somebody and assuming that their exposure would be higher than it is. You'd be shocked, I think, not you,
listeners
would be shocked at how few interviews a lot of hiring managers and honestly, a lot of professionals have conducted.
Sure.
And if you haven't done that many, you can't really say that you're that good.
That's exactly it.
You could be good, but you could be better if you've done a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we just want to make sure that everybody knows that there's room for growth. There's room for improvement. Right. This is an area where there's a lot of room for improvement. And I would suggest it's interesting that people aren't working on their improvement in this area because the stakes are so stinking high.
I know.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars. so much money. Somebody told me once, oh, we don't want to fly the guy in because it's expensive. Okay. What do you think is more expensive? Offboarding him in 6 months?
Yeah.
Because he doesn't, you've never seen him before in person. You don't know.
Right?
Honestly.
Oh my gosh, Kate. I recently got an email from somebody in our accounts over here at Manager Tools who said, we've got a newly promoted manager, has been working within our organization for some time, and they're unable to have a conversation. And my first question was, why did we promote them? And the response was, I think it's because they worked remotely this entire time.
Mm.
And they'd really only been having interactions via email.
Mm-hmm.
And they can write words well. However, unable to carry on a conversation and now is a manager. And that's the risk you're running by doing things like that, right? Not bringing in your candidate because it's expensive. Okay, well, there may be something about the virtual world. It's not conversation, obviously, but there may be something about the virtual situation that when you meet them in person, you're like, whoa, I didn't plan for this. So saving the money seems silly. It almost seems silly.
It does. It's penny wise and pound foolish. Same thing. Recently, I got an email. I was talking, in one of our newsletters, we were talking about resumes. Mm-hmm. And I suggested that you should include at the bottom of your resume, your degree, from where you received it, and in what year you received it.
Yeah.
And I got some pretty spicy emails.
Ooh.
I did. I got some pretty spicy emails. Specifically, I was vaguely accused of ageism.
I was going to say. I knew where you were going.
And unfortunately, I mean, it kind of breaks my heart that someone would just assume such negative intent.
Yeah.
I had to write an email back and say, hey, if I don't know when you graduated, I can't tell if what's on your resume is enough to showcase a full career.
Yeah.
It's not an age question. It's a how long have you been in the workplace and what did you do at that time? If you don't tell me when you graduated and you just graduated in 2020 and you only have 4 jobs on your resume, I can't tell if that's a reasonable thing.
Right.
I have really no idea. And I can't tell if there was a big gap between when you graduated. And I don't care about the gap. I just want to know, have you worked hard in your career? At Manager Tools, people work hard. That's just how it is here. And it would be a disservice to a candidate to hire someone who wasn't also a hard worker.
Mm-hmm.
It would be really hard to work here if you didn't have that quality. And one of the ways I gauge that is how dense is your resume from the time you graduated, or, and you don't even have to have graduated. It's not that, but there are milestones. And from that milestone to now, I need to know the density of your work. It represents how much work you've done, where you've done it. I have all these questions, and it's the same thing. Questions that the candidate asks out of sync of the interview process are just as baffling when mm-hmm. you think about the process as the idea that your resume doesn't have density. You get one page. We are hiring, right? We are currently hiring. I looked at 750 resumes. If your resume is the only thing, and I'm looking at so many, it has to be reflective of your qualities. I can't, it's the only thing I see. That's it. You get the one page. That's all you get. And frankly, if it doesn't have when you graduated from college or when you entered the workforce, which is more important, right? How on the earth am I supposed to know?
Mm-hmm.
How much have you done? And when did you, I just, you only get one page, y'all, and you only get 2 hours. So we got to think about how we're presenting ourselves in the snapshot that we're providing. It's like you're handing the hiring manager 3 Polaroids of your life. And I'm supposed to know everything from that. And I can't. I am making educated guesses, a series mm-hmm. of them. And frankly, if I see your resume and it doesn't look good, I can't make an educated guess. And so therefore, my answer has to be no.
That's exactly the same thing with interviewing.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask so many questions that I can't assess whether or not you'd be a good ad, I can't say yes to bringing you in. So the answers to the questions, which I'm glad that you received, are now not useful in any way, shape, or form because you are not going to work here because I don't have the information I need. And folks, this is exactly why the two-way street analogy for interviewing is dangerous. It's dangerous for organizations and it's dangerous for candidates. it means well, because in theory, yes, both sides do get to ask questions. If we're only talking about the candidates who get offers, mm-hmm. but the analogy implies a quality of questions during the same period, that is the interview period itself, which damages the candidate's chances because the manager's time to ask questions is curtailed. If I don't get the answers to my questions, I'm not going to say yes, we'll bring you in. You'll be doing yourself, your organization, and your candidates a disservice by answering their questions during your point in the interview. There's no candidate whose questions are so good that they are a better indicator of their value to you and your organization than their answers to your questions. So tell them. You want them to know everything there is to know about your firm, and you're absolutely going to provide them those questions, just not right now. All in good time.
Good.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Kate. Thanks, everyone. That's all for this week. Have a good one, and join us again next week for a new topic.
Have a good day, y'all.
Bye, everyone.